Blog Talk Radio. This broadcast of the PJC Media Network seeks to present wholesome, thought-provoking, and entertaining content. However, the views expressed by the hosts of PJC Media are theirs and theirs alone. They do not reflect the views of this network or its affiliates. Please utilize listener discretion.
Hi, everyone. Hi, everyone. And welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Each week, we feature different topics concerning issues that sometimes can be difficult to talk about. These issues concern children and adults who may be autistic, have Asperger's, or have mental disorders of any kind. We will discuss law enforcement and how they interact with these persons. Now, let's start the show.
Hello, 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 good people of the 313 and other area codes around here. Welcome to another episode of the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show on Friday, March 8th. I'm your host with the most, Maceo Coleman, and we have with us our hostess with the mostest, Miss Jenny White. You there, Jenny White?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how you doing today?
I'm fine, sir.
Oh, great. First weekend in March, and we back at it.
Yeah. These months are starting really fast.
Moving pretty fast.
I'm telling you, wow. Yeah, it'll be Christmas in a minute.
Oh man, yeah. Let's get to the spring and summer first. And then we can speed on.
They don't forget that, huh?
That's the fun part.
Yeah,
that's the fun part of the year. So today, what we're going to be talking about is we're going to go get political and talk about the election of 2024. It's going to be between the MAGA Republican Party versus democracy. You know, these folks are trying to take us back to the 1800s and beyond, back to slavery. When we had back to Jim Crow, they're just crazy. So I don't know if you saw the State of the Union address last night with Joe Biden. Did you see it?
No, I decided not to listen because I thought it might not be okay, and I didn't want to see it or listen to it. But I heard today that they were doing, he had done great.
Yeah.
And you got another person that I guess they think it too, because they're trying to get their little piece in.
Good evening, everyone.
Well, hello. Hello, Sister Dorothy.
watched the speech last night.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it because the man did not pull any punches. He did not hold up. He even tried to make jokes out of stuff that we knew were true, but the Republicans said, "Oh no, we didn't do that." You were getting ready to vote on a bill that would have stopped all these immigrants from coming over here, and the day of the vote, Trump called a couple of them and told them, "Well, no, don't y'all vote on that. Y'all wait till I get into office so I can look good with it." And they actually stopped the vote. Yeah.
Did Trump say that? Oh.
Yeah, and Joe Biden told him about it last night. He said we were all together on this, and we were going to pass the bill, and then the former president and told y'all don't pass it, and y'all didn't pass it. And so he said, so why are we waiting? Let's get the vote done.
Yeah, Joe was on one last night.
Oh, yeah. Joe did not hold back.
He was on one last night. So.
Well, I am so glad.
I'm
glad they escorted Marjorie Taylor Greene out of there.
Oh, did they?
Oh, she's crazy.
Yeah. Hollering and screaming in there, and they escorted her out, and then some other guy brought there. Some other guy that she had brought there, after they escorted her out, he started screaming. They escorted him out.
Yeah, I heard somebody else scream. I saw her because they had put the camera on her. But
because there is a rule that has been in place within that building.
That's
it said
good.
You cannot wear any hat in that room.
Okay.
Ooh.
And that was another reason they put her out of there.
Yeah,
she had on a Trump hat.
Yeah, let's make America great again hat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna play a few excerpts of the State of the Union address last night. So just tune in and I'm gonna play them. So here we go.
The number one political priority for the Republican Party, tax cuts. We have two ways to go. Republicans can cut Social Security and give more tax breaks to the wealthy. That's the proposal. Oh, no. You guys don't want another $2 trillion tax cut? I kind of thought that's what your plan was. Well, that's good to hear. We're not going to cut another $2 trillion to the super wealth. That's good to hear.
They are going to try.
that was part of it, talking about the $2 trillion tax cut that Trump had implemented for his billionaire friends.
Yep. And you see, Joe went straight to him and told him, I know what y'all say. I know what's going on. And he told him directly, This is your plan when he gets in, if he gets in office.
Oh, yeah, he didn't hold him up last night. He shared some of the progress that they made as far as, 15 million jobs created, student loans forgiven, and a pretty good economy for most, considering Trump has declared that he's going to be a dictator on his first day in office if he wins, Joe Biden has talked about businesses paying a higher tax rate to counter the $2 trillion tax break that Trump and his friend, that the Republicans gave to his billionaire friends. So, yeah, it was pretty good. And he wasn't stuttering too much. He didn't look like he was having any mental lapses or cognitive issues yesterday. So he actually surprised me, too, that he did so well.
All right, now.
Yeah, Joe came out with guns a-blazing.
Yeah, he might have been on that cocaine last night or something. I'm just kidding. They had Joe hyped up on that espresso, that caffeine.
He was hyped up when he came in the room because generally they come in and they go to the podium. Joe stood out there for 20 minutes talking to Republicans and to Democrats.
All right, now.
And held up the speech for 20 minutes.
Yeah, he did. It was late getting started.
Oh, yeah, because Joe was speaking his piece before he even got to the podium.
Yeah.
Well, I missed it. I did.
But I want to know something. I am not really clear. Well, I'm halfway clear on how Iran is ran. Don't they have a dictator there?
Who, Iran?
Yes.
Yeah.
Israel. Israel.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Oh, Israel. No, Netanyahu, I think, was voted in, was elected. So no, they don't have a Democrat. They don't have a dictator in Israel. Netanyahu was elected in for, I think, the second time.
Okay, because I can't understand why is it that all these foreign people that have became citizens, you ran from your country to come over here, prosper,
okay,
and for safety. And then you have a man that tells you, and ain't lying to you, he lies a lot, but he ain't lying to you.
Hmm.
He say on the first day of his, if he gets reelected, he's going to become a dictator. Why would you vote for any other party to be put up under a dictatorship?
Well, it's a lot of people that vote against their own interests, literally. You know, I guess, you know, they feel like it won't affect them. It's amazing to see, you know, over 70 million people voted for him in the last election.
Yep.
So, you know, it's, well, I think a lot of, you know, and then you got these, you got these black folks that, I just don't understand them. They black in color, but they are definitely
are not invited to the barbecue.
Oh man, not at all. I mean, they got this one guy they're talking about, you know.
He wanted to be the vice.
They got the one fella, big fella in North Carolina running for governor.
Yeah,
now.
He's crazy.
Oh, he's stupid. You know.
But you know what? Have you ever sat down and held a conversation with people from North Carolina?
Yeah, actually, I did last week. I was in Dallas, and there was some people from North Carolina out there.
They are still afraid of the white people.
Oh, these were white people. You talking about black people in Carolina?
Yes.
Oh, I've got a cousin out there that, you know, is dealing with some situations. I mean, you know, master mechanic, but getting taken advantage of at these dealerships, you know, terribly. I mean, underpaid. I mean, I think he's making like $25 an hour. And this guy showed me how to start a car from under the hood from Carolina. And I'm in Michigan. I mean, you know, he told me how to start a car, and I wasn't even in the car. So, yeah. Well, you know, a lot of the southern states I have found still have, you know, I guess, the caste system, you know, caste system, you know, the have and the have-nots, and I guess the blacks really need to know their place, even though, you know,
yes.
I think that because there was a time where you could come from up north or go down south, and they would know that you weren't from around there.
Right.
They would know that you ain't from these parts, you know. And I do believe that in certain parts of the South, it's the same way. I think, you know, blacks know where their place is.
Well, January 1st of 2024, they were given Medicare Part A, Part B. And when I explained to my friend in a Zoom call that we have had that since I was a kid, they were like, no, I don't think you have. And I told them, you need to Google it.
Wow.
And then when they found out that one of them said, well, hold on, let me Google it now because my computer, tablet is up so I can look it up. And then she said, you are right. We're just now getting it.
Wow. Well, you know, just for our listeners, you know, if you want to tap in and get involved in the conversation and ask a question or share a comment, press the one on your phone and we'll tap you right on in. You can get on in this conversation. Just tap the one on your phone. We'll bring you in. But, yeah, it's down south is different. You know, I mean, I love it. You know, I've got folks down in Georgia, and I stayed in Georgia for a while. You know, and I felt like I was ahead of the game back in the 80s, you know.
You are.
I know I was, just because,
you
know.
You still are.
Yeah, you probably, yeah, you're right. But, you know, there are a lot of, you know, other people from other places that are down, you know, well, at least down in Georgia. I mean, I'm sure in other parts of the South as well, you know, but I know Georgia is like the Mecca, you know, the blacks have.
Right, because I was going to move to Georgia. And after holding a conversation with a couple of people when I went down there to visit, people that I didn't even know.
Okay.
I said, oh, no, I can't move down here because I'm going to be a household name because they're going to find me hung from a tree. Because I can't keep my mouth shut.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and that is something that me and my wife, you know, me and Sonia talk about in terms of, you know, relocation and going somewhere where the politics aren't favorable, you know. And I think one thing is having stayed in Michigan or Detroit specifically, coming from Indiana, you know, as a child, we were in a very segregated city. And so there was a time, you know, early on, but I mean, I was a kid, you know, less than, you know, younger than 10. In the 70s when, you know, Detroit had stress, you know, majority white police. We had just gotten our first black mayor in 72. And so as I was growing up and became a teenager, we had a black mayor, you know, Coleman Young. And at that point, he started changing the police department to be to include more black people. And so this is what I grew up with. And, you know, being young, I thought it was the norm, like it had always been that way, but it hadn't been. And so, you know, and I was talking to somebody about this the other day, you know, really just recognizing in the past few years that we were the first generation outside, you know, on the other side of civil rights. We were the first generation. So prior to that, our parents, you know, were dealing with that Jim Crow. You know, my mother, you know, growing up in that, and she tells stories about, you know, her dealings with white people and white people down south in particular. And, you know, I got pulled over by, you know, racist cops on the other side of 8 Mile. 8 Mile is, you know, the line that separates Detroit from the suburbs. And, you know, the white police stopped me at the 8 Mile, you know, and took me to jail and held me and wouldn't even tell me where I was at so I could call somebody to come and get me, you know. So I was dealing with that type of racism, you know, just on the other side of Detroit, you know. And it still exists. But I just don't think we dealt with it as much and as often as we would have had we been down south, you know, backwoods. But, I mean, we've got places up here. You go, you know, up north and certain corridors up, you know, here in Michigan, and you can run into some places that you don't really want to be, you know. But I think we were, you know, just – being in, growing up in this area, we didn't really have to deal with a lot of white folks because the white folks that were in our neighborhood when we moved in were on their way out. So the neighborhood, you know, eventually turned black, you know, all black.
Well, when I was a kid.
Did you remember?
What did you say?
Did you remember when you and your friend went to the movies? Do you remember that?
Yeah, we just had my eighth grade graduation, and, you know, me and two other friends had gone to the movies out at Eastland for those, you know, that in the city, you know, that know where Eastland used to be. And so we had gone to one movie and then snuck into another one after that one. So by the time we got out, the buses had stopped running. The mall was closed. And so we had to walk from the mall, you know, at least 2-3 miles, well, probably further than that, to Cadieux to catch the bus going back home. So, you know, walking down the street, you know, white boys was riding down the street harassing us, telling us niggas go home, and, you know, and so they ended up, long story short, they cornered us at a corner. And it was probably about 10 of them. It was a couple carfuls. They had sticks and stuff and stones, literally. And they had us surrounded, and they were throwing stones in the crowd where we were at. And me and one of the guys ended up fighting. And, you know, fortunately, everybody else just stood there and watched, you know, because if everybody had jumped in, I'm sure we would have got beat down. But the police ended up pulling around the corner, out the alleys, you know, and they hit us all on the hood of the car like we had all stole something. Ended up taking us all to jail, called our parents. They came and got us. And then, you know, that following Monday, we tried to go down there and press charges. And, well, it might have been the next day. I don't remember how long it was. But they wouldn't even let us press charges. They were like, you sure your boys didn't start it? And so they, you know, kind of brushed that one up under the rug. But, yeah, that was a case of racial interaction.
Well, my family was the first family to move, black family to move on this block and actually in this area. And my mother would tell us when we rode our bikes, don't go any further than the land that your father has purchased. There was not a house on either side of our house. So I got to ride my bike from the corner to like the third house off the corner. And a white woman came. My mother, we had a screened-in porch. My mother was sitting on the porch, and she was watching us ride the bikes. And this white woman came from the other end of the block and said, "Nigga, what are you doing here?"
Oh, man.
And she actually grabbed the handlebars to my bike. And then she started shaking the bike. And next thing I knew, my mother was at my side, and my mother was a good Christian woman that I heard her curse. And she said, "You better get the fuck away from my kids. And who are you calling nigga?" And then she grabbed the woman.
Okay.
You can take your ass back down there on your end of the block. We're not bothering you. Well, there was a white guy that lived across the street, and we later found out his name was Frank. Frank had sat there on his porch and watched it all.
Okay.
He came across the street and told the white woman, "You know you wrong. Leave these kids alone and go on back down there. You're always bothering somebody." And he told her, "You don't know what these people do to you. This ain't the South." And then he told her, "And to make sure you go home, I'm going to walk you down there." And he turned around, and he was walking behind her, and he was hollering and screaming at her all the way back down to that end of the block. And so the next day, the woman came down to our house with her husband and apologized. But the next thing we knew, this whole block damn near was up.
Wow.
Everybody moved off of this block except for Frank and this other lady. I can't think of her. No, it was three people. A lady named Ann, Frank, and I can't remember the other lady's name. But they were our protectors.
Well, that's good.
Okay.
There are some good white people.
That's a good thing. And we have another person that would like to say something.
Well, we
good
got
evening,
everyone. All right,
hello?
Caller. State your name and where you calling from.
Brother Mace.
Yes, sir.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. Yes, I can now. My name is I'm Michael. I'm your cousin. I'm in Atlanta.
All right,
and,
Mike, what's happening?
And first of all, I appreciate the great conversation. I really do, because you brought up some very, very, very important points about the South. One thing I wanted to touch on real quick was the way they treat Black History Month in the South.
Okay.
They treat Black History Month like they don't realize this is just a token. They just throw Black History Month at us, right? They celebrate Black History in Atlanta. Now, this is supposed to be the home of the Civil Rights Movement, right?
Okay.
They only celebrated a couple of weeks of February. That's how much.
Right?
Couple of weeks. So why we don't celebrate every day to the fullest? Well, and the reason why is no need. I don't know when the last time you came to Atlanta, but Atlanta is no longer the Black Mecca, as they say.
Check that out.
Atlanta has, I mean,
they're not.
More white people have to stay in Atlanta than blacks now.
That's
oh,
right.
Yeah. The community it's been gentrified.
Oh, yes, most definitely it has been gentrified. The same community.
Wow.
You used to come to in the summer times.
Yeah.
Now that was 100%, 99%, 98% African American black. Now that's 90% white.
Stockbridge.
Oh,
you would not
wow.
even know it now.
Wow.
And
wow. Yeah, I heard Stockbridge got got paved roads where it used to be dirt roads.
Man, I went down just last month for Valentine's Day, went to see Mama them, and yes, it's quite different. It's quite different. But what we have to understand as a people that we just don't get it, man. They really have an orchestrated plan for us and the communities we no longer live in.
That's true.
See, Atlanta has an affordable housing crisis. And it's been devastating to the lower middle incomes, because you got to realize those were the people that were staying in those communities. Now our homeless, what Atlanta is dealing with is a homeless epidemic, right? Now what Atlanta is dealing with is the young black brothers killing each other. Why? Because they have no home. They have nowhere to relate to. They've been uprooted. Think of a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 11-year-old that has moved from a place where he was born and raised based. Now he got to move across town. Now you're looking at the gang across town accepting him, right? Think about where we at now. We're in an urban city, gang
right?
Everywhere. Now this guy, he done did something to this gang 2-3 years ago. Now you got to move over there.
Hmm.
Think these people don't know this though? This ain't nothing that I'm just thinking about because I'm so smart or nothing like this. All the killings that happened during the gentrification, now all of a sudden they've slowed down. Guess what? They haven't made any laws to slow them down.
Okay.
A lot of the young men have been murdered or in prison. Those people that are trying to that were trying to identify with the community, now they are identified with the graveyard, penitentiary.
Well, you
it's
know,
sad.
Yeah, it is sad, and the sad part about it is by design. It's by design, and it's a national plan, you know, because every black community across the country is being gentrified. Detroit has been gentrified. I mean, you come down here and you look at downtown Detroit and some of the new apartments that they, you know, they built up, and you know, it's not affordable, you know, for the average person living in the area based on, you know, their annual income, you know, but they have to have, I think 20% of the housing has to be generated where it's, I'm not going to say subsidized, but it's, you know, it has to be made affordable, you know, I think at least 20%.
But it is subsidized through Section 8.
And
okay.
It needs to be. We're inviting, even in Detroit, you're inviting people into your community. Why can't they make that community now? Why they can't make that affordable, whether it's subsidized housing or whatever, for people that are from there, right? Why we always got to get the bad end of the stick, the poor housing, the poor policing, the poor schools?
Well, you know, I don't know that they've been invited as much as they have invited themselves, you know.
Well, they've been invited, May.
Well,
when Duggan got into office,
yeah,
and started giving away these houses to the people from the suburbs who moved out because the black people were here.
Right.
So he's been giving all kinds of breaks on these houses that are in the land bank.
Yeah, that's
for people
true.
To
that's
move
the orchestrated
back into
plan
the city.
Right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the orchestrated plan right
when,
there.
When he raised the tax property taxes on the black people and then took their homes.
Yep.
Mm.
And the white people moved into their homes and into their communities.
That's true.
Then
That's true. You know, I hear some feedback. You know, sound like somebody's, you know, phone is too close.
It might be me. I was moving around. I'm sorry about that.
No, I just hear, you know, a little feedback, a little echo. But, you know, yeah, they overtax the residents in the city of Detroit $600 million. Which
and
did
refused
cause,
to give the money back to the people.
Oh yeah, and what he said was sorry. Sorry, we didn't mean to do that. Yeah, but you know, it was done on purpose.
He,
you know,
he meant
a lot
to
of
do
people,
it.
Oh, for sure. A lot of people lost their homes, like you said. $600 million worth. They overtaxed.
Been living in your home all your life. It was your parents' home, and now all of a sudden you swoop in. You don't give them a plan to help them save their home. And then when he found out that the black people were in an uproar about it and they were going to vote his behind out of office, then he changed it around and started giving you payment plans to stay in your house.
Well, do you remember how he got in office? He got in office by a write-in campaign.
That's right.
He got in under a write-in campaign. Enough people in the city of Detroit with the illiteracy rate so high that they, you know, they say the illiteracy rate was so high, but everybody, you know, spelled his name right. And
but see, the problem here is that black people vote by name recognition.
That's true.
They don't vote by who is – they're lazy. They don't want to educate themselves on who can help them the best.
The most qualified.
So
right.
when they see a name that they recognize, that's who they vote for.
Well, you know, they had the fix was in. You know, I know, you know, all them black people didn't write his name in. That's just like with this upcoming presidential election. You know, the fix is in. You know, they're going to do everything in their power to win this election by hook, definitely by crook, and by any means necessary. So, you know, they're going to be stuffing ballots. They're going to do, because this is going to be a last-ditch effort. This is going to be Trump's last time. You know, it's going to be the last time he's going to run. I mean, you know, he'll be dead in a few years. So.
Yeah.
You know, but, I mean, I'm sure it won't be the last time that the Republicans try to divert democracy over autocracy, but it's going to be Trump's last hurrah. So they're gonna do everything they can to get this election in, because if they get it, he'll die in office. And then, you know, they'll just appoint the next MAGA Republican person to be the president. But while we're at it, stay tuned. I'm going to play another excerpt from the State of the Union last night by Joe Biden.
Mm.
Here we go. All right.
It's a decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court majority wrote the following. And with all due respect, justices, women are not without electoral power. Electoral or political power. You're about to realize just how much you write out. Those bragging about overturning Roe v. Wade have no clue about the power of women. But they found out when reproductive freedom was on the ballot, we won in 2022 and 2020, and we'll win again in 2024.
All right, well, we're going to win again.
Yeah.
They're going to find out.
And that's,
what
he told them was the truth.
We got another person.
My thing is that if you can tell a woman what to do with her body, all these men that are in prison for raping women, for having these children come here, not wanted by their mothers, and then facing child abuse because they're not wanted, because the mother doesn't even know who the father is, doesn't know the family history. You might be raising a crazy child, but my thing is they should be castrated. If I have to have a baby, then you have to be castrated.
I know that's right.
Let's see how that bill goes by.
All right. We've got another call on the line. Let's bring in a caller. State your name and where you from.
Is that Robin?
Okay, well, maybe she took a bath.
Yes, I'm here. No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes, hi, everybody. How are you?
All right.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, just want to say hi.
Oh, okay. Well, hello.
Okay.
So, all right, straight from Texas. So.
Yes.
Are you on the train?
I am. Yeah.
You're on the train. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're on the train headed to Michigan, huh?
Yeah. So if it disconnects, you know, the signal is terrible.
All right.
It's not
I mean,
my fault.
You went through a tunnel. Okay.
Yes.
Well, have a safe trip. We'll see you when you get here on Sunday.
Yes, sir. Yes.
All right.
Sunday.
Yeah, it's 31 hours.
Are you serious?
Yes, ma'am. I'll be in Chicago
holy
tomorrow,
moly.
Too, and then I'll get there in Detroit 12 midnight Sunday. Yes,
girl, ma'am. You should have been on that Southwest Airlines flight thing for $49.
Yeah, I know that's right. Say 4 hours to get it over with.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
Right.
Your vacation time is used up trying to get here.
That's
and
right.
Trying to get back.
Say 3 days here, 3 days back. Huh?
Right.
Vacation is
okay.
On the way. Right.
All right.
Exactly.
All right.
I think we're gonna have to have a GoFundMe.
I got five on it.
I know that's right.
We should have put some of them people. Well, they did put them out last night.
They put two out: Marjorie Taylor Greene and the guy that she brought there.
That's a good thing. I wish they would take her out. Period.
Well, I didn't like the lady who did the response either after the speech. I didn't like her either. The youngest senator.
Oh, man.
What about the lady that was talking in the kitchen?
That's who I'm talking about. She's nuts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was terrible.
Yes, she was.
Yeah, those Republicans are an embarrassment.
Well, they had to say something.
But I noticed last night a couple of the Republicans kept standing up and applauding Joe.
Okay.
He's not all bad.
No,
he's
no.
not.
And he's better
no,
than
they
all
could just, that's the truth. But what I want to know is why haven't the Democratic Party offered us anybody else other than Joe? And the excuse that you think Joe is the only one that can beat Trump, I'm not falling for that.
Yeah.
It's not Trump. It's the facade. It's everything that comes with Trump. And I think America is lucky that we had someone with the experience. The way Trump left office, I think really Biden was a blessing to our country.
Oh, yeah.
That's
I mean,
true.
One person at the right time. I mean, you know, even though he was the person that orchestrated the mass incarceration, you know, the...
Exactly.
It ain't all good.
Three
strikes you out, you know, Bill, back when Clinton was in office. I mean, you know, you can find a lot of these politicians that might be on the right side, you know, of certain things now who... you know, wasn't always on that side in their, you know, certain stages of their career, you know. So it's like, okay, you trying to make up for some of that, you know, some of that white privilege stuff you did back in the day.
But did you watch the Speaker of the House last night?
Yeah, all his body movements and half smirks, you know,
and acknowledging Joe by shaking his head up and down. I was like, okay, you see what Joe is saying.
Yeah, a lot of times he was, you know, shaking his head like, you know, he didn't agree or he was lying.
But, right.
Yeah, he seemed a little lost, like he didn't really know what to do.
Well, he can't show too much favor.
Right. No, not at all. Not at all.
Well, they showed him shaking his head, up and down, more than he did the shaking his head from left to right.
I didn't see him acknowledging, you know, much Joe was saying. You know, if anything, he was looking, you know, looking real crazy. You know, I heard somebody say he was looking like his wife found his passwords to his phone. Yeah. That's the look he had on his face, right? Like he about to be exposed.
But it was a good speech.
Yeah, it was very good. They were able to highlight, you know, the points, you know, based on women's right to choose, contraceptives, you know, the abortion, you know, debate, Roe versus Wade, talked about the economy, you know, and the jobs, and talked about a lot of Trump's shortcomings, his predecessor. So
yeah.
So yeah, that's what the election is going to be based on. So if you know they keep blowing that horn and tooting that horn, I think they'll get you know some traction. But there are people that are having a problem with this war over in you know in Gaza, over in Palestine, you know, with Israel. And so there, you know, have been some, you know, a lot of non-committed votes, you know, and hopefully those non-committed votes will convert to Biden votes in the general election in November. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are very unhappy with America's support of the war over in Palestine because they're just, you know, half-heartedly, you know, having, you know, creating genocide, you know, just killing innocent people, women and children.
Well, that's why Joe, in the beginning of the speech, Joe said that we're going to send American soldiers over there to build some kind of building there to help the food, where they're going to post soldiers there and help the food and the medicines get through that need to get through. And he said to anybody that messed with any of his ships coming through the Red Sea, it was going to be a problem. Because, you know, they've been attacking all these ships trying to get supplies from other countries through.
Right.
So right, Joe right. said, you touch one of mine, it's going to be on and popping.
Well, we're going to
I want to dress up.
Yeah,
I want to address something that hit a little closer to home when she said the men, if a woman has to have a baby and the man should be castrated and to that extent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
they've changed their mind.
I'm speaking, and that's a great thought. But also, I think more the issue is us trying to keep families together, right? And before
Amen.
We can do that, we gotta implement ways so Black people can communicate better. Once we have children or once two kids, where I say a child get pregnant, I'm talking about the age of 16, 17, 18. She or he really don't know how to communicate, right? Especially at this point in life, where we have to start implementing ways for our young people to communicate better. They're quick. They're here in the state of Georgia. They'd rather pull a gun out on you and shoot you than to talk to you. And this young boy is angry.
Hmm.
The young girls here are literally shooting people.
Wow.
And I think, and also in the state of Georgia, they lack social classes to help with communicating. They keep this stuff out of the classes, out of the classroom. And I think that's a big issue as far as just keep teaching our young people how to communicate. And that way you don't have to, you know, mutilate anyone or chop anyone up. In the state of Georgia, we have...
Go ahead, Mike.
We have 45,340 men incarcerated. 61% of that is African American, right?
Okay.
I'm talking about over 27,000.
Hmm.
And I took a second to let that kind of hit you a little bit. This just in the state of Georgia.
Okay.
Now, just think of throughout the country. Just think of how many Black families are missing a very important resource. If you have a family, the head of a household locked up, 93% of the time, that family member would be a father, the head of the household.
Okay.
That's a very important resource, missing out the family structure that a lot of times we don't even pay attention to, that some people even promote, you know.
Hmm.
I don't need no man around here, which you don't. But at the same time, with a family structure, it's necessary.
So it's definitely.
We have nothing in place. I'm sorry, brother. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's definitely necessary, you know, that children are raised with, you know, not only a mother, but a male influence. And I think that, you know, that's a large part of the problem with, you know, a lot of the men today is that, you know, they are so emotional and have female tendencies, not that they're gay,
yes,
but because
yes,
they've been raised, you know, by their mamas or in a house full of women, you know, without male influence. And so, you know, I heard a stat that says that a lot of brothers, you know, that are incarcerated, aren't incarcerated, you know, for murder or otherwise, not incarcerated because of the crime they committed. They were incarcerated because, you know, they made an emotional decision, you know, that they, you know, that a lot of them later regretted, you know. And so it's the fact that the men aren't in the home. And a lot of that started, you know, right around the time that they, you know, started giving the Medicaid and aid to dependent children and family assistance, and you couldn't have a man in the house, you know, especially one that was working, you know. So there were things put in place to, you know, get men out the home, you know, and I guess some of the women that are on the line, you know, that could probably speak on that as well, you know, that may have been able, you know, may have been in those situations. But, yeah, I mean, you know, just the fact the mass incarceration piece was a big push to keep the families broken and take a lot of black men off the streets and out the homes and put them in jails. You know,
and a lot of them are innocent.
Oh man, that's a whole nother show. You
we
know,
need, see, we
fact,
need that rep.
Or you know,
we need them to have that rep. We need to get that felony on their rep. You know,
yeah.
So in
exactly,
turn, that would not go for certain jobs.
That's
certain
exactly
social
right,
benefits they might qualify for as far as going to school.
You can't.
Yeah,
get
we can tell that
out,
y'all later. We'll get.
You're not supposed
we
to.
We have
you,
a program
you,
here in Michigan where black attorneys got together and started expunging the records of black men. And they do it at least
now,
once a month.
That's a great program. That's great.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great program. That's a great resource for our community.
And we have programs, a lot of programs here for black young men. You have a program that's called 100 Great Men, I think it is, and every week they meet, and the men are like their big brother, successful black men. They take the place of the father that's incarcerated.
That's, oh, man.
And they
see,
said over 90% of the
that's
young
neat,
men that, they said over 90% of the young men that came through their program are in college.
Great, great, great.
That's
beautiful. That's
just the effect of a male, of a father figure. People don't,
in the South,
we'll look, it's unfortunate, and I really, really hate to say this. In the South, we'll just kind of slow on picking up on social things. It seems like we'd be so happy to be accepted on their jobs. You know what I'm saying? Now they might be paying us a little bit more than what they. We still not making the same money. We just happy to be making a little more money.
Mm-hmm.
We really missing the true implementation of their plan. To have us move on the outskirts, like we think we do something, we done move to Stockbridge, and we can move to Alpharetta now. We think we doing something. But literally all we're doing is giving them the city. This might be the last time we see a black male in the city. And I know I got a little off track, you know, but.
No, I mean, you're right on track because we've got a white mayor. And, you know, things in Detroit didn't start turning around until he got elected. And then they said, okay, now we can implement this plan. You know, once the white mayor came in, right, you know, around the time that Detroit went through its bankruptcy. And they sold everything out from under us, sold our whole foundation and gave it away. And then, you know, gave it away, pennies on the dollar, and then turned around and said, oh, you know, like the DIA, Detroit Institute of Arts, I think they sold that for $1 billion and then turned around later on and said, oh, it was actually appraised for $2 billion. Okay. So y'all made that mistake, huh? And then, you know,
look
Belle
what they
Isle.
Did with Belle Isle.
Yeah, we leased Belle Isle to the state for 99 years. Yeah,
what
know,
kind
so.
Of crap is that? That was the only part that the black people went on that the white people didn't come on.
Yeah, it was.
Now
it
you,
was,
go,
you, know,
you go out there this past summer. It was so bad downtown. Of trying, they were actually closing the park off so that you couldn't even get on the island to even go to the park. And then they showed the people sitting on the beach, and 80% of them were white.
Okay, that's the reason they did it. And then they had the beach shut down because of E. coli. And we ain't never had the beach in Detroit shut down because of E. coli. It was out in Metropolitan Beach. But
every park that was in the suburbs has been shut down for E. coli. Never.
Right. Yeah, but they shut it down now because they're so nasty. They had dogs out there, you know, desiccating in the water. I saw a dog out there messing in the water. You know, it's just you know, really, I mean... I mean, and this is what we're living through right now. You know, this ain't the 50s or the 60s, you know, the 70s or the 80s. These are 2000s, and, you know, and we're living through history, whether we know it or not. I think a lot of us do, but we're living through history. And, you know, the people that are the generation behind us, they'll be talking about this like we talk about. The 1800s and the 1920s and all that, they'll be talking about what we're going through right now. So we have to be aware of, you know, where we're at in, you know, not only history, but where we're at in our daily situation and where we fit in the situation, you know. And I often think, you know, and say, you know, we deal with the death of our loved ones. We deal with, you know, our own economic situations, whether good or bad. We deal with a lot of different situations as individuals. And sometimes, you know, certain things we deal with are overwhelming to us, maybe because we've never dealt with them before. Maybe we've never seen certain things before. And, you know, certain things can be overwhelming and devastating. But then, you know, I often go to the point of where, you know, you look up in the sky and, you know, you see the stars and you see how many stars it is in the sky. And then you just imagine if there was life on those planets, you know, and those, you know, or those people looking down on us and how small we are in the scheme of things, you know, and how sometimes how insignificant the things we're going through really are in the big picture. And I think that, it'll give us some perspective, just like I had an old friend of mine call me today and tell me that her 25-year-old daughter has been in the hospital since August of last year. You know, she said, I don't know if you knew this. You know, I was like, no, I didn't know. You know, she had an aneurysm in her aorta. So they, you know, they had to open her chest up and do that. And they had to do it, you know, she said they had to go in a second time. She's on dialysis, and she's got a number. She's got a trach right now, and a number of issues for a 25-year-old young lady who's dealing with an illness. And it just gives you some perspective to say, you know, what I'm dealing with really ain't that bad, because it could be a whole lot worse.
I have a question for Mike.
Yes.
How many black young women do you have missing in Atlanta?
Wow.
It's funny you say that, because I wasn't aware, but a friend of mine has been following that pretty close. And from what he's saying, it's quite a few.
Okay. The same thing is happening here.
He's saying something about they taking these women over to another country, sex trafficking.
Yeah.
And, they're taking them out the country. They just fall off the face of the earth.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's something I think us as a community, we need to, you know, just start paying more attention to as well. Because for some reason, we're not talking. It's not on the news, you know. It's not on the news.
I was made aware that we have 39 black children, females, missing.
Hmm. Oh, man. No, I wasn't aware of that.
I was made aware of it from someone that works for the police department.
Oh, man. Well, that's something we need to be talking about.
Wow.
Now, these are missing women, missing children.
Well, you know, the women. One girl, they went so far as to sweep some lake yesterday for her.
Wow.
The one who rode the school bus, got off the school bus. She didn't even, she didn't even make it a block before she came up missing.
Wow.
How old was she?
16.
No, I haven't heard of that. I don't watch local news very often, so, you know, I'm not really, there's a whole lot of stuff going on in the neighborhood I'm not aware of, unfortunately. I can tell you what's going on around the country and the world. But my own backyard, I didn't know that.
Well, I watch the local news because I want to know what's going on so that I can stay safe and I can keep my family safe.
Oh, it makes sense. I need to start tuning in. Just kind of see what's happening.
Right, because my granddaughter got chased, went to the movies with her friend, and they were all with her friends, and everybody was walking to their car, and two guys came up behind her and started talking to her, and she kept walking. But she was keeping her sister was out there too, and she kept her eye on where they were. And as she was going in her purse, she pulled out some mace and a screwdriver.
Okay.
And she said, she turned around and asked him, what do you want? And she said, when she said it very loud to get everybody's attention. And then the two guys stopped. And then she told them to start hollering, somebody call the police. And then they took off running.
Wow. Oh, they had some bad intentions.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now that you mention it, one of my friends, sisters, well, a former friend, sister, posted on Facebook a few weeks ago how her granddaughter was missing. She looked like she was probably either a teenager or early 20s. And I don't know if they found her yet, but you're right. She was missing. And that's the first person that I have known personally that had somebody come up missing. And it didn't make sense. And she even posted a picture. They had a video. You know how the police will show a video picture of a suspect. And, you know, he had two pictures, you know, two video still shots of two guys that were suspected in her abduction. And I don't know if she was found or not, but now that you mention it. Yeah. And that was local. That's local. So, yeah, I'm going to have to do a little more research into that. But, yeah, I mean, I've heard in regard to, you know, black women being abducted for their eggs, you know, for reproduction purposes. Also, you know, I'm trying to think something regarding stem cells. You know, so... And then I think some of these
and
people.
Kidney.
You said kidneys?
A kidney.
Yeah, it's a lot going on. Yeah, I'm going to do a little more research into that. That'll be a good show. We might even talk about that next week.
Someone has, they want to talk.
The tap of man, Jenny White, where they at?
4-8-4-9-8-2-8-4-1.
Well, just did a last.
That's me.
Oh, sounds like Sister Lucy Payne.
Yes. I want to ask you.
She finally woke up. I missed you.
I know. Dorothy did. Was it that grandmother that was looking for her grandchild, granddaughter?
They still haven't found her. That's the one that they dragged the lake for yesterday. In the suburbs.
She kept saying her granddaughter was missing.
Yeah, that's her. The child is still missing.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's not good.
No, it's not.
That's why you have to be aware of your surroundings. You know, it's good to have a weapon for your protection. If you don't have a weapon, have some mace and a screwdriver.
Yeah.
You can't do all that. Those are considered weapons.
Oh, for sure.
Well, like my granddaughter said, she'll take her chances with the court as opposed to taking them with the people in the street.
I know, that's right. They ain't got no love for you out in the streets, for real.
With the new laws in the state of Georgia, I mean, it's literally like everybody carries a gun. I'm talking about when I say everybody, you see females with guns just like you see men. Like,
and you better be more afraid of those women with those guns than you are of a man.
Yeah, because they just locked a white girl up for shooting a man. He a fender bender, and she was saying he was trying to leave the scene of an accident, and she fired him up, and she just caught herself a life sentence.
Wow. Oh, she killed him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she killed
him. Over a car.
This, This happened about 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh man, wait. I remember back in the '80s, when I was catching the bus, you know, about 1 in the morning out in Conley, Georgia, catching the bus from work, coming back to Atlanta, and you know, had to walk a 5 mile stretch or run, depending on what time I left the restaurant, and would catch up with a white guy leaving the gas station, and you know, ex-veteran, and he had a 9mm. So I think it was you could carry a concealed weapon. I don't know at that point if you needed any paperwork to do it, or you know.
That's how it is now. You don't really. As long as you got your paperwork, you can carry it in your pocket on your hip. They had, you know, a lot of people be so, what's the word, negligent. A young man, the girl had the gun in her pocket, and the boy went in her pocket and took it out of her pocket.
Right.
It was just hanging in her pocket. He went in her pocket and took it.
So he just snatched it.
Yeah, because so many people with guns and have not been properly trained to actually use one.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Oh, well, here you have to take a class.
Yeah, it's like an 8-hour class.
Yeah. You have to take that class at the range.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless you know somebody.
Yeah.
Right, just sign the paperwork, you avoid the class, so that means you ain't learned nothing.
Right, exactly.
That's the truth. But we have open carry here.
Yeah, you don't need a license to open carry.
No,
but
you
do to conceal it. Now, if you can't see the gun and you ain't got your paperwork, that's illegal. But if you got the gun where people can see it and you don't have any paperwork, you know, ain't nothing they can do about it.
Right.
Right.
That's the situation
what it is
here.
With Texas, I don't know what the rules are here in Texas. I know you can't you can't carry your weapon in a courtroom, a school, in sporting events.
Yeah, unless you
well,
go in.
Here you can't be within 200. You can't be within 200 feet of a school with a gun, or if you're going to jail, you definitely can't take it in the courtroom because they have the monitors there.
Yeah.
But that's been for years. You can't even take a cigarette lighter into the court.
No,
yeah.
But it's open carry here, though.
You can't take it into a school unless you get ready to
not
get mad at
her. Right, or a police officer or something like that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Or a church, you know, unless you're about to kill a bunch of.
Oh yeah. But it's making me want to get mine. Ugh.
I'm surprised you ain't got it already. When in Rome or something.
I don't like guns, but it seems like I'm gonna have to just go and get mine because this is crazy.
Yeah, like I always say, you know, don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't bring a knife to a gunfight. But, yeah, we've got a presidential election coming up in November, and I think it's just like Trump was in the news every day when he was in office, Trump going to be in the news every day until this election.
And
every
that's
day,
the truth.
It is. Every day you turn on the news, they're going to be talking about Trump, about something. I mean, he got about 4 or 5 cases going on, too, so, you know.
Yeah, but that's not
going to stop
none.
That's not
going to
stop
him off the ballot.
Right.
You know, a lot of people tried to get his name off the paper.
Right, but the Supreme Court ruled the other day that until he's convicted, that they cannot keep him off the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are. They're creating stall tactics. They definitely
didn't they say that? They know he is a that he had a part in the January 6th, but they want, what is that, the 14th Amendment?
Yeah.
Right.
But they're trying to skate around it. You know, they're doing a lot of things that they're not supposed to do. They, you know, they are bending the law into his favor. You know,
but anybody else, you're going to stone them.
Yeah. It's something about the 14th Amendment. I haven't looked it up.
Yeah, 14th Amendment.
Then he can't do it. He just can't. But they're going to try to glorify him, because they're going to get down and worship.
But you know, we serve a jealous God.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a good show. It really has.
Right.
Always.
Looks like Jenny White about to shut us down.
I really appreciate your let me join the show today.
Oh yeah, well, appreciate you.
Well, you can come back again, sir.
Most definitely. Yeah, most definitely. I'm a fan of them.
Yeah, Michael is Annie Pearl's son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, she has her show every Friday. We'll see you next Friday at 8:00.
Yeah, Mike has a book that he's written. So at some point, we're gonna highlight his book. We're gonna talk about Mike's book.
Oh, okay.
That's for real.
Yeah.
Yes, unlike
what's the name of your book?
Matter of fact, Mike, tell us a little bit about it right now while we got you on the phone.
Okie dokie, hold on one second. The name of my book is Unlikely Hero. It's actually about a character named Mr. Man. In the South, as you all probably know, like park football, it's a lot. It's everybody's involved. So Mr. Man, he went to prison, and after he served 20 years on a 15-year prison sentence. And after coming home to an environment, Atlanta, Georgia, the Edgewood community, which Macy's familiar with, a community in which he helped destroy, he actually made a difference and changed the community around. And that's he did that by getting himself involved with the park league, coaching football teams, and getting involved with the kids personally. I'll tell you that much. But
all right. Well, we appreciate it.
It's a book about choices, and I want you to at least try to read to the end, because it's very, very it's a surprise. I have a surprise for you at the end.
And it's unlikely.
All you have to do is come back next Friday.
Oh yeah, I'm coming back.
Okay,
most
all
definitely.
Right.
I'm coming back.
Okay.
Mike, you
Mike,
said
I'm
all right,
folks.
Wait, Virginia. The title is Unlikely What?
Unlikely Hero.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. I'll try and get it read by next week. Are you on Amazon?
Well, hold on. Let me say this. I'm getting ahead of myself, telling people about it. It's actually in. She's editing it now, right? So I'm kind of waiting for her to finish editing it, and I can put together the rest of the book as far as the cover and everything. Then I can actually get it printed. So I guess I might be looking at another month or so.
Okay.
At least. But I'm definitely going to be on the show. So when I do get it together, you definitely will know about it.
All right.
Okay,
well,
thank you.
All right. It's been real. You want to take us out with any final words, Jenny?
Okay. I'd like to say sometimes we must be hurt in order to grow. Sometimes we must fail in order to know. Sometimes we must lose in order to gain, because some lessons in life are best learned through pain.
Yeah, it's going to be upstairs.
So,
all right.
Adios.
Amen.
Amen.
I receive
y'all
that.
Have a great weekend.
All right.
Everyone,
thank
have
you.
A great weekend. Be blessed and be safe.
All right, Jenny White.
Thanks to all.
All right, y'all. Take care. See you next week.
Okie dokie.
See you next week. Good night.
You just tuned in to another episode of Let's Talk About It with Jenny